Tuesday, August 27th. Great Britain has had the heaviest raids by German planes since the start of the war. Areas along a 500-mile coastal front were attacked. Singled out for the main raids was the industrial center, the Midlands. Southwestern England reported the worst raids it has yet experienced. London was bombed, but only the outskirts. People were kept up all night. In Berlin, official sources said British planes were foiled in an intended raid because of anti-aircraft guns and searchlights. And a Rome communique reports a British raid on northern Italy. Now the report of Eric Severide, reporting direct from the British capital. Go ahead, London.
This is London.
Thousands of sleepy London families were sitting in their shelters last night at the same time that thousands of sleepy Berlin families were sitting in theirs. In both cases, the population of the two great capitals was driven underground by just a few dozen young men circling around among the clouds. The alarm here in London lasted 6 long hours. Some of the twin-engine bombers apparently flew over London on their way to the Midlands, where they started some fires in industrial establishments. Others circled around over London, reappearing over the center of town several times, and dropped a few bombs on the outskirts of central London. Three of these planes are reported to have been destroyed. Incidentally, they tell us the German flyers who dropped the bomb right in the heart of London on Saturday night were knocked down, and that may explain why Berlin never reported that particular bombing. Up to the present time, the figure of German plane casualties for yesterday is 46. With 15 British planes lost. Air Ministry experts last night repeated that Hitler is trying to destroy the RAF in its bases as a prelude to mass attacks. They declared that his air attacks will get tougher instead of easier, and that these night raids will certainly increase. But the air authorities here said that at the same time, British plane output now equals that of Germany, excluding the imports from abroad. And despite the bombing of airplane factories, Lord Beaverbrook announced last night that last week more fighters and bombers were turned out than in any previous week. The alarm in London sounded right in the middle of the theater and movie hour. Thousands of people remained in the theaters for hours. At the Victoria Palace, the waiting spectators took turns at the Lambeth Walk on the stage and then did some community singing. In other theaters, they played phonograph records. At the London Hippodrome, the performers put on an extra 2.5 hours' work, singing and dancing for the air raid crowd. Ambassador Kennedy was listening to the Wagner concert in Queen's Hall across the street. Some of the audience left, but he stayed through to the end. Many buses stopped along the street where people took shelter. A few minutes after the all-clear was sounded, the subways were running normally again. Janet Murrow and I were watching The Boys from Syracuse on the screen at the Leicester Square Theater. Charles Butterworth was sitting on his throne, downhearted about the lack of pinochle players, when they drew a thin curtain across the screen to announce the air raid alarm. The lights went up and some of the audience began to leave. Those downstairs were moved back to the seats under the balcony for safety. A sailor in the front row was very embarrassed and disgusted when his girlfriend insisted that they go to the shelter. We ventured out and stumbled along in the darkness to Piccadilly. Just then, one bomber droned directly overhead with 20 or 30 searchlight beams trying to find him. We decided to go into a public shelter, an unused subsoil restaurant that found about 50 people falling asleep in their chairs. These people seem to take shelter for about an hour on the average and then grow tired of it and take their chances in the streets in order to get home. We walked up Regent Street and saw a few taxis still moving and a bus going here and there. There were always people standing uncertainly in doorways, watching the skies. When we reached the broadcasting studios, a knot of policemen and soldiers were standing there watching the fireworks far to the west. A vast sheaf of searchlight beams was moving back and forth. Suddenly, they concentrated their light on one spot under the clouds. They had caught the radar. While faint flashes of exploding bombs could be seen on the horizon, there was a constant sparkle of anti-aircraft shells high up. But they were so far away, nothing could be heard. After midnight, there were still a few flights by single planes over the center of London. It was not until shortly before dawn this morning that the all-clear was sounded. Before that time, I think most of those who had taken shelter were back in bed. I return you to CBS New York.
This is New York. That was Eric Severide reporting from London. Here's a dispatch from Rome. Foreign Minister Chano's newspaper says that the only solution of the Egyptian situation is through arms. and before the statement was published, some well-informed persons believed Italy ready to declare war against Egypt unless the Egyptians gave evidence that they were discontinuing help to the British. Now the news, direct from the German capital, reported by Edwin Hartridge.
This is Berlin. As Bill Shire already told you last night, Berlin had another air raid alarm, and it was interesting to watch the reactions of people to this second consecutive alarm. But after the big show of Sunday night, they were taking no chances last night, and few stayed in bed. However, those expecting any fireworks were disappointed or relieved, depending on one's viewpoint. A few searchlights could be seen chasing around in the sky, but that was all. And the alarm ended after 3/4 of an hour. This morning, we are told by official quarters that during the air raids over England yesterday, the Germans shot down 67 British planes, and 7 others were destroyed on the ground. And during the bombardment, one team says it lost 18 planes. It was a big day, and it would appear, even from this distance, the German Air Force is extending itself in its raids over all of Britain. And from these developments, there is a temptation to draw a conclusion that as long as the weather is suitable for raids on England, the Germans will continue to launch them, for the air offensive is now in high gear. And here is an eyewitness report of a propaganda company reporter of what he saw during an air raid on London. It is published in the Bedford Mittag this morning. And apparently, this propaganda company reporter says that he was with a flight of 9 Dornier bombers of the 9th Air Squadron. Their objective was an airfield on the outskirts of London. He believed that during the attack, the Dorniers flew so low, at times they were only 6 feet off the ground, and some of the planes cut leaves off neighboring trees. This squadron was attacked by 30 British air fighters, according to this reporter. And the Dorniers, or their unnamed fighter escorts, managed to shoot down 5 of the enemy ships and get away. The leader of the squadron was killed in action, but that was the only casualty the Dornier flight suffered. And the propaganda company reporter says in his article that a gasoline depot, an armament factory, and a switchyard were badly damaged in this raid. Well, that is a part of the German reportage on this widespread air war over Britain. Another Berlin paper discloses this morning to its readers that German planes dropped bombs on the outskirts of London and state that these attacks were aimed at military objectives of great importance. Then in the same story, it accuses the British Air Force of having bombed places of historic importance in Germany, such as Bismarck's mausoleum and Goethe's garden house in Weimar, and having dropped incendiary bombs on residential quarters of Berlin. And this type of bombing is aimed at non-protected civilian population and not the soldiers, writes this paper. But the London War Criminal, as it writes, may be sure that each attack on the life and property of German people will be revenged, end of quote. The German government has sent London a diplomatic warning via Switzerland, accusing the British of attacking German Red Cross planes. It states that if these attacks continue, then reprisals will be taken. The proposal of the Governor General of Bermuda and of Winston Churchill to lease America a naval base on this island is interpreted by the local Anzeiger this morning as, quote, England must abandon the Bermuda Islands, unquote. Bermuda is described as one of the most important and valuable naval bases of Britain, and that now the British lack the necessary power to maintain or make use of these bases. However, the local Anzeiger fails to point out that under this British proposal, the United States will only get the Great Sound Harbor on a long-term lease, that the sovereignty of the islands remains with British authorities. The Foreign Office disclosed this morning that the Irish Free State Minister to Berlin has presented some suggestions whereby Irish ships will be given the opportunity to sail through the German blockade of Britain. We understand here that the opening of a window in the blockade for the Irish would be subject to German control. This is Edwin Hartridge returning you now to Columbia in New York.
And such is the news reported direct this morning from London and Berlin. Now at this moment, Albert Warner is standing by in our own nation's capital to give you the latest news from Washington. We take you now to Washington.
With these air raids over London, it's natural that there should be anxiety and controversy here over the effectiveness of American preparation in the air. Wendell Willkie, Republican presidential candidate, charges the defense program is being bungled. He wants William Knudsen made head of the Headless National Defense Commission, which at present, however, does report directly to the president. And Senator Harry Byrd, Democrat of Virginia, sponsors a resolution to create a special Senate committee to speed up the defense program. It's his way of returning to the attack, for the Defense Commission has reported to the White House a very different, more optimistic picture of progress toward American air strength than Senator Byrd has been painting. The Defense Commission says that 2,046 planes for the Army and Navy have been ordered since June 2nd. This figure is set against Senator Byrd's warning that only 343 combat planes had been ordered in the last 100 days. As a matter of fact, the figures of the Defense Commission are not very far different from those of Byrd for combat planes. The difference is largely accounted for by the number of training planes recently placed under contract. And Byrd fortifies his position, gives out the letters of Stimson and Knox, Secretaries of War and Navy, from which he had drawn his figures. But the Defense Commission experts say the first problem is to train pilots, and therefore training planes are right now vitally important. Then to expand its more optimistic picture, the Defense Commission recounts the whole number of planes under order, including those ordered a considerable time ago, but not yet delivered, and including also training planes. The total number of planes thus under order comes to the very respectable figure of 6,747. Senator Byrd still insists that preparations are lagging. The American people want airplanes not on order for delivery a year or so hence, he said, but for delivery with promptness. Now, most people connected with the defense program will admit there have been delays. Here are some of the factors in that situation acknowledged on all sides. First, congressional legislation limiting and even further reducing to 8% the profits allowed to manufacturers. Well, maybe the resulting delay is the fault of Congress, maybe of the greed of industry, but contracts had to be rewritten and were slowed up. Second, the long postponement of action to permit swift amortization and fair tax treatment of plants and machinery built new for emergency defense purpose. Well, maybe this is the fault of Congress, or maybe of the administration, for insisting that it be linked with the complicated problem of taxing excess profits. Third, there is the failure of swift congressional action on the $5 billion defense appropriation, which includes the bulk of the aircraft program. Fourth, as far as airplanes are concerned, there is the fact that a great part of current combat production is going to Britain. That's nobody's fault except Hitler's, unless you believe that the policy of selling to Britain is wrong. These are some of the delay factors, generally admitted, and there are others which are in controversy. So while warplanes drone over London, the struggle of rival claims in Washington at least bears testimony to the universal recognition of the need of air defense. Swifter goes the debate over conscription. The Senate might even reach a vote by tonight. Otherwise, the decision probably comes tomorrow. You could count 70 senators on the floor last night. And in place of the old-fashioned debate wandering from one end of the compass to the other, they were sticking closely to the subject at hand. Senator Wheeler caused the Senate stir yesterday, accusing Sir George Payish, British economist, of saying he helped to get the United States into the last war and intended to get it into this war. Sir George overnight declares that he merely said he wanted to present the facts to the people here and let them decide if they should get into war. A British embassy spokesman is credited with saying disgustedly, "We wish someone would drop Sir George over Germany as a pamphlet." We return you now to New York.
There's a dispatch from Rome. An official Italian communique admits that British airplanes bombed northern Italy during the night. And with this news, Columbia concludes this regular morning report of European developments. Eric Severide reported from London. Edwin Hartridge reported from Berlin. And Albert Warner from Washington. Larry Elliott speaking, this is the Columbia Broadcasting System.